Thanks for listening to the Adam and Dr. Drew Show on Podcast One.
Well, we're going to come back around on wah-wah-wubsy and self-esteem and the catastrophe that that is. And we'll clean our palate with a little hot love boat talk.
Love boat.
Shelley Hack, Kevin Teague. Oh, yes. Important figures in the 70s.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got it on. Church, but it's... Now, Drew's board for us and is with addictions. All right, so we're talking to Matt, the porcelain punisher fondelier. He had a little exchange with a representative from the Apple phone company, I guess. He had an issue with his phone on Monday morning. He had an issue, and so I guess he called up the service rep, or he couldn't call up, but he had to contact the representation or representative and try to figure it out.
So worst feeling in the world, waking up on Monday to my phone just not coming on. Basically, this Apple logo, that's all there is. Normally, I would just take it to an Apple store, but because of all the quarantines, all the Apple stores are closed. So the only way to do it, to get any help, is to do a chat. So we'll put up the chat here right now. It starts with...
Can you chat from your phone, or you have to use your wife's phone?
Use a laptop, basically, once I got into the office.
All right.
So this person starts it off with, "Hi there, I'm your friendly Apple agent. I hope you're doing fantastic today, and thank you for the contact. Are you able to explain the issue that you're having today?"
Oh, my God.
I then explain, "Yes, very simple. My phone will not turn on past the Apple screen. I tried to reset it. It still will not pass the initial icon." This is the response. "Oh, I'm super bummed to hear that has happened, and I promise we will do our best to crack this mystery together like the Scooby Gang."
Oh, my God.
I wanted to throw my fucking laptop against the wall.
That is crazy.
That is insane. They have no idea who I am. What if I was Mark Garagus?
Do me a favor. I don't know if you want to experiment right now, but go back and chat again and see if you don't get exactly the same response. You know what I mean? I bet it's just some sort of robotic whatever. But the fact that they think, I don't care whether it's actually a person or a robot, that that's an adequate response is insane.
Well, I've been warning everybody that Subarus are made with love, you know, not with galvanized steel anymore. You know, we're infantilizing everyone. We're talking to everyone as if they're kids.
Yes.
This is normal. Look. If you are a mega company like Apple, nothing is by mistake. Everything has been sort of vetted.
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, with purpose, yeah.
With purpose. The reason we're talking to everyone like they're 9 years old now is because they're 9 years old when they're 41.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't mean...
You've said this about music all along.
Yes. It doesn't mean that Mark Garagos isn't going to call in or communicate with Apple and feel insulted. But Apple's making a decision. How many Mark Garagoses are there versus how many 35-year-olds with fucking man buns and bracelets who fucking think like assholes who fucking are used to this shit? You know, Gary, I don't know if we have a screenshot of you know, I entered the, I don't know, the million meter club or something on my rowing machine. And it was the same thing. I got an email from the hydro rowing thing. It was like, "You're super awesome." You know what I mean? Like, just talking about how great I was.
Why is it that they can get
this
away
this fucking
with...
self-esteem movement, Drew? Do you understand what's going on with Wow Wubsy?
You would think that people would get those emails and be pissed and insulted.
You would. I would. Matt sort of would. But no, we're dealing with the fucking new world order around here. This is not, it's not good. But by the way, this is spreading into the government, right? It's just, we have a mayor that's all good vibes. There is no substance. There's no substance. I don't know what the plan is other than good vibes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When these felons, when these formerly incarcerated people serve their time, we owe them our gratitude. Is that a policy? we owe felons gratitude? What is that? Was that a jobs program? What is that?
It's
we
insane.
Owe them our gratitude? First off, no, we don't.
It's beyond.
They stole property or they put their hands on somebody or they did something that us as a society deemed worth incarceration. Why do we owe them our gratitude?
Reminds me of the Love Boat episode where the little kid is stowed away and has to serve his time.
Hi, my name is Luis.
Luis, I need to see my mom. We'll get there.
Yes.
We're going to put up your hydro email. I'll read it to you. 1,000,000 meters. You're extraordinary.
Yeah!
You're amazing.
Woo!
You're fantastic. You're marvelous. And beyond.
Oh, and beyond. Marvelous, fantastic, extraordinary. So I'm extraordinary.
Wow.
Amazing. I wish.
Beyond. You're beyond.
Someone should share this information with the people I live with. It would be news to all of them. I'm extraordinary. I'm amazing. I'm fantastic. I'm marvelous and beyond. Somebody created this for an adult to read.
Yeah. Do you think that with the advent of AI, this is going to get worse? Is it going to take us down a deeper hole? Or could it pull us out?
AI is only figuring out what people want and giving it to us.
I know.
What takes us further down the hole is people wanting this. If AI figured out that people like suede and jerky, they'd be going, we're sending you out a vest, a suede vest filled with jerky. You know, that's what they do. They'd go, this is what people want. People want to be treated like fucking 9-year-olds.
It's hard for me to believe that. I really have trouble accepting it. It's so offensive to me that I have trouble believing that there are people that respond positively to that. That's how fucked up I am.
Well, because you and I realize that it's nothing.
It's worse than nothing. It's kind of it's insulting. It's like you expect me to respond to this, like as though you know anything about me.
It's also
it's
like one of those things where it's like when somebody addresses, I could remember just hearing people at school, like addressing a full auditorium of people, you know, and you go, you're all here today because you're all special and you all have something to contribute and you're all number one. So just reach up and take out your right hand and pat yourself on. And I was like, God, let's just fucking get to it. I'm looking at half these fucking dopes I go to junior high with. They're fucking idiots. The teachers are losers. I'm nothing. Nobody's anything.
Stop it. Yeah.
Let's get on with whatever the information part is about feeling good. Ugh. I don't know. Show me wow, Wubsy. Gary's been tempting me, but this thing's a decade old now, and the chickens have come home to roost. Self-esteem movement, not a good thing. It's not.
Yeah.
You want people to feel good about themselves based on nothing? That's a recipe for fucking disaster, people. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You don't want your fucking kid feeling that way. You don't want your fucking airline pilot feeling that way either. You don't want anyone feeling good about themselves when they haven't done anything that merits it. 2009, it's been over a decade. Mr. Cool.
You don't have to do a fancy dance. You don't have to wear the fancy pants. You only have to give yourself a chance. And you'll see you are the coolest. You don't have to talk a certain way.
Hee-bah!
There's nothing special that you have to say.
Zippy-wee!
Just be yourself every day. And everyone will know you're the coolest. Being cool is easy and fun. You don't have to be like everyone. Be yourself, you'll be number one. And you'll feel like the coolest.
All right. This song flies in its own face.
Ugh.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like,
you don't have to do anything, and you're the best. You're number one.
The best part is everyone will realize.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah.
Everyone's going to realize you're the coolest, and you do fucking, you're catatonic. You do nothing. Hey, you guys remember that person that did nothing in junior high ever? Maybe you go, that guy's the coolest. Also, let's just extrapolate your math. Wow, that is your real name. Everyone will know everyone's the coolest, hence everyone is the coolest. So there's,
because everyone does nothing, everyone's the coolest.
Your graduating class in junior high is 421 kids. Every single one of them's the coolest.
Yeah, what's the matter with you?
And then when there's a job,
they're each number one.
All right, so then they get a job, and the job goes out, which is we can only hire the coolest. All of them get the job?
That's an evil person. That's a bad job.
Well, you're the coolest.
That's like, a bad job.
You're going to think you're the coolest. Everyone's going to realize you're the coolest. The fucking point is, who cares if you're the coolest?
Right.
And what is the coolest? And go about your business.
Right.
So you don't have to do anything to impress. So basically, here's what they're saying. You don't have to do anything to impress anyone. Everyone shall be impressed.
Yeah.
Because they will know.
Because if you get out of your own way, well, then it just all happens. If you don't worry about anybody else, you don't worry about how you dress, you don't worry about how you act, it'll all just come magically.
Everyone just looks like I'm an old, insane person. You guys have no idea what this means. This is the beginning of that letter. The fucking letter you got, the letter I got, everything. This is the genesis of that.
Where it started.
This is fucking young assholes watching this shit and being told they're the coolest.
Young assholes.
Well, let's call them what they are, right? Right?
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk Love Boat?
Yeah. I don't know where to start.
I don't know where to begin either.
I guess with Luis.
Luis was a young Hispanic boy who stowed away.
Yes. He brought a rich family's luggage on board the ship, and they just held out in the hull somewhere. And
right.
Then the captain's daughter and the rich family's son found him because they're exploring the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they became blood brothers with him, stole money from the rich family, and brought him food, and then they were found out. It's a heavy story, man.
Right. The dad.
I almost could not watch this episode, I got to tell you. Not because of this. There was many things in it that were just so – I was like – I felt so bad for the actors.
I was looking at the poor woman who played the wife.
Yeah.
She had six syllables in the entire thing. It's like, Tommy, you know we're disappointed in you, right? Like, she was featured on the masthead at the beginning, like, and starring in alphabetical order. She didn't do a thing. She didn't say a thing.
Yeah, but those two, that couple was sort of, you know, sort of actor A and actor B from central casting. You know what I mean? I don't know if they had a background of those two.
I did a dive on both of them.
Oh, tell me.
Well, first things first. The logic is weird because you have your son. So you're in your cabin, right?
Yeah.
There's a 7-year-old emaciated Mexican boy who's stowed away in the fucking bowels of the ship, right?
Yeah.
Your son has befriended that boy.
Yeah.
You have $200 cash in your cabin, adult male, and it's been stolen from your cabin. I accuse you, boy, who's never left the bowels of the ship, from getting into my cabin and saying, how did he have access to your cabin?
Right.
You think he tunneled into your cabin? Your son, on the other hand, probably would have taken the money from the cabin since he befriended the boy and given it to him.
Well, Captain Steuben, of course, he saw all that. He was wise enough to realize it.
The doorknob is broken on what's-her-name's...
Well, that storyline was – I thought somebody had to write this, Drac. Somebody wrote this.
I looked up that idiot.
Who wrote it?
Yeah.
And?
He wrote a lot of musicals.
Really?
Yes.
Like musicals that succeeded?
I have no idea.
Oh, my God.
The story is that one of the guys from Barney Miller, the old guy, was kind of there at the end – was insanely jealous, and any man that spoke to his wife, he would just threaten.
He threatened to beat him up, yeah, and call him a creep and a sex pervert. Literally a sex pervert was the phrase.
It was bizarre. The whole thing was bizarre.
I had trouble watching it. I really had trouble watching this one. It almost jumped. I'm almost like, I'm not sure I can go on. It was really rough. It's like, God damn, this was the 70s, man. I mean, you know where it really jumped the shark for me, right?
Hmm.
Doc has a particular scene that is so outrageous that I almost jumped out of and screamed.
Well, there was a great, I think in the middle of this one.
Yeah.
I think there was that thing where they went down to Doc's office and he was just walking a 6-foot blonde in a bikini out of the examining room with the saxophone playing.
And then kisses her.
Yeah.
He kissed her. Goes, hey, come back and visit me anytime you want, anytime you're not feeling right. I was like, what? What the fuck? What the hell? It's like they've gone all the way now.
there's like a 23-year-old, 6-foot blonde in a 2-piece bikini and candy high heel shoes.
Yes.
And he's just escorting her out of the
exam room.
Yeah. With the kiss on the lips.
Yes.
Like, see you tonight.
Come back in anytime. I mean, exam, I'll get you. It's like, what? Hey, man, again, it's the Love Boat.
Somebody is looking at that script from the Princess Cruise Line going,
yes.
And then Dr. Bricker walks out door, you know, interior, Dr. Bricker's office, examining room door opens, saxophone music swells, tall blonde comes walking out, escorted in 2-piece bikini, escorted by the doctor, in parentheses, they kiss, you know, she exits, enter Gopher and Isaac. Like, you're reading the script, this fucking ship's doctor. Just kissing her goodbye.
By the way,
just kissing his patient goodbye.
What follows is equally outrageous. The captain bursts in and goes, give me a sedative. I need a sedative now. You're the captain of the ship. We're going to give you some greatest,
by the way, you guys want to know.
Oh,
if
my
you
God.
Guys want to know how you can see a joke coming or whatever coming. So the captain comes in and he goes, this jealous husband's been threatening me,
right.
and I'm going insane.
Yeah.
I need a sedative.
Right now.
Right now.
So Inject me.
The doctor goes, fine. Get undressed and go into my office.
Which was also bizarre.
Right.
To me.
Now, as a writer,
yeah.
I now know where this is going.
Right.
Get undressed.
Yeah.
You need, you're getting, he's going to give you a volume. You know what I mean? You have to get nude, get undressed and get in my office.
Well, he completes it with, I need to examine you first. Like,
no,
oh, okay.
I don't even,
let me see how you, he did say something, gave it a little nod to, let me examine you, see how you, what's going on. You know, so this is all meaningless. It's all bullshit.
But he said, I don't remember that part, but he said, I need a sedative. The doctor's going to give him a sedative.
Yeah.
He told him to get undressed. As soon as he told him to get undressed, I knew the jealous husband was going to come down. I knew she was going to be in the dressing room. I knew the door was going to open with him undressed. That was all just part of that era's humor. All the tropes. You say, oh, no, it's not what you think. It's not what you think humor. They had another one in that.
Where Isaac was in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, go hide in the shower.
Yeah. And of course, he goes, turn the shower on.
Guy comes home. Yeah. The guy comes back in his tuxedo. He's in a tuxedo,
he's
right?
He's gambling. He's
coming.
Tuxedo.
He's up gambling. Comes back down. Oh, boy, I'm going to use a shower. Then he reaches in. Of course, the reach-in move.
Oh, yeah.
They reach in.
Yeah,
turns the shower on. Yeah. By the way, he's fully dressed in a tuxedo. It's going to be 40 minutes before he gets into the shower. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He's like, I need a shower. I'm in a tuxedo. By the way, if you really want to gild the lily on the vaudevillian kind of shower humor, when one guy's hiding in the shower and the other guy reaches his hand in there, at some point they go, where's my conditioner? And they'll be feeling, and the person will actually hand it to him.
Yes.
That's the real vaudevillian humor. Like, Isaac hiding in the shower, turns the shower on, Isaac's being hit with it.
And we just ate that shit up, like as though it was funny.
Well, what were your choices?
Gilligan's Island.
Remind me to tell you about Gilligan's Island.
What?
I'll tell you in a second.
Oh,
first,
my goodness.
Hey, Gary, this is important. The pilot, don't answer me yet, but look up the pilot for Gilligan's Island and who played the professor.
Ooh.
So I was taking a dive on some of these cast members.
Yeah, I'm looking one up right now,
and what they were up to.
Yeah, yeah.
And the name of the actor who played the original in the pilot, the professor from Gilligan's Island, yes. That is none other than John Gabriel.
The guy who was on the Love Boat?
Yes.
No!
Yes!
What the hell?
Yes!
That's crazy.
If you go look over that guy's IMDb or wiki, or whatever, you will see 1980 Love Boat Man.
Oh, there it is, man.
That's right.
Lloyd Gaines
played the was his last name Gaines?
What That's
was
what
his
it last says.
Name? No, and his real name.
Oh.
His real name is, I don't know why that
Gabriel.
Gabriel. Yeah. That guy. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Flying nun.
You would just be an actor back then and just do 77 Sunset yeah. Strip, Hawaiian Eye. And I just go from one gig to the next gig.
Yeah.
Just play the guy.
Well, you and I were talking that the guy that played the captain was also Murray on Mary Tyler Moore Show. About as accomplished as you could be as a television actor, if right down from like Mary Tyler Moore, is him.
Mm-hmm.
And is that how was that? Him running in without his pants on?
Mary Tyler Moore Show. Yeah. Yeah. Incredible Hulk returns, Ryan's Hope. I mean, you just were actor. Is Gilligan's Island the
1992.
Professor?
1992. Oh, no. That's 1992, right?
Well, it said the original pilot. It said when I was reading his I'm Wiki whatever page, it said originally cast as the professor. But
maybe it didn't get to air.
So here's the thing. When I typed in Gilligan Island pilot, the first thing that came up, I clicked on it, it had John Gabriel. But now that I'm looking back at that same page, the air date for that is 1992.
Hmm.
That's weird.
So he played the professor in Gilligan's Island when they rebooted it or they did some special after the actual professor died.
Right.
I think so that guy died at a youngish age.
I think that's true.
And the Gilligan's Island would have been late 60s. And the guy played that by 1992 had passed, so they needed – I'm assuming he died because nobody in that cast turned anything down that had to do with Gilligan's Island. It's the only work they had, right? So
they were stuck as that
they were
cartoon.
Stuck. Right.
So Shelley Hack.
Oh, Shelley Hack.
So we got to go through that.
Oh, the best.
And I just looked up Kevin Teague, the guy that was the romantic interest.
Yeah.
Now I remember where I knew him from, Emergency. Wait, that show actually had a big effect on me.
Ba-da-ba-da, yeah. Ba-ba, ba-da-ba-da, ba-ba.
We need the intro.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Emergency.
Drew, I cannot – first off, I only knew him from Emergency.
Me too. I couldn't figure it out, but now that I just read it, I'm like, oh, yeah. Because that show actually had an effect on me in terms of my career choice. I like the doctor in the ER with the radio.
Right.
I thought that was the coolest thing.
That was like – 72 to 77.
Yeah.
The thing about good horns.
There he is. They have this walkie-talkie. Ooh, there it is. That Robert Fuller.
This is a big band.
Oh, yeah. What you did in those days.
Oh, yeah.
There it is. Fireman Roy DeSoto. You know, this was before there were paramedics. He was a fireman.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I was watching that, too. By the way, did you notice he went to go to the balcony and she showed up 18 seconds later?
Absolutely.
Building one in my house.
You're going to build a balcony here?
Yes.
You have to overlook the ocean water, though.
I'll put a screed up. A screed. I need tending to, Drew.
That's really funny.
I go in my office, I shut the door, no one ever comes in.
It's milliseconds, too. All you can do is look
out.
He
just looked out over the balcony.
Somebody like Shelley Hack will show up. I don't remember her being that attractive.
I don't either.
What happened? What is that? She's 19 here, and we know her from 30?
No.
And something happened along the way?
No. What happened with Shelley Hack, she's beautiful.
Like really beautiful. A model, like stunning, like ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. And we don't remember her looking that good.
Correct.
The
whole time I'm like, what? I don't remember. Like, what?
All right. Let me explain two things.
So she became a Charlie's Angel. She replaced Cheryl Ladd?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Can I explain what happened?
Well, for people that were alive during that time.
Cheryl Ladd was a classic beauty.
Yes.
And bosomy.
Yes.
Versus Shelley Hack was not. She had that sort of model, sort of waif model.
Like a runway model.
Yeah. And she was modest in the chess department, and Cheryl Ladd was filled up that bikini nicely. So it was a little more of that back in the 70s and 80s. We like that.
Yeah.
Also, in Charlie's Angels, her hair was always a little weird. It was a little short and a little whatever. We also like long hair. And Cheryl Ladd had long blonde hair, and Shelley Hack had a shorter. So she had kind of an up. She had kind of an uptown New York kind of model. Go upper left or whatever, Garrett's fine. Oh, Cheryl Ladd. All right. Sorry. Go the one with Cheryl Ladd. Sorry. Yeah. There you go. To the right. There you go. So Cheryl Ladd had this long flowing hair and a nice nice CD cup up top. and Shelley Hack had this kind of weird hair like your mom's hair or a secretary would have or something. It's kind of short and curled, and it seemed very Manhattan model-esque, but it wasn't California.
Yeah. But I would argue that she looks different here than she did.
Well, she really looked fantastic in this episode.
Yeah.
But the thing about this episode,
You know what I'm thinking?
Drew's thinking.
I think she had an eating disorder. And I think some of the facial features we like here is the super thin thing. And what we're seeing later is where she gets the parotid enlargement from vomiting or whatever she was doing and is sort of normal weight. Unfortunately, I think that's kind of what we're looking at.
Well, I got to tell you,
she was uber thin on this thing.
Her neck was like 11 inches long.
Right.
It was like crazy.
Right.
Here's what I know. She is so fantastic looking human being, but she's an astrophysicist, and she's scaring everyone off with her big scientific words, right?
And her hair up.
And her hair up and glasses. Yeah. They always do. So now she has to pretend to dumb it down to meet her man.
To meet Kevin.
To meet Teague. To meet a man.
Fireman
or
Roy
or whatever.
DeSoto.
Right. So she dumbs it down.
Yeah.
And of course, he's very attracted to her, but she's so comedically dumb that he basically says to her, look, I like you. I don't know how to say this, but it's at a certain point, it's more than just physical. We need to be able to have a conversation. And then she's insanely insulted and calls him a jerk.
Yes.
Now, I don't know how you write these things, but
I felt bad for the actors.
But the point is if you are dumbing it down and the person says to you, the male says, look, you're beautiful and I like spending time with you, but I can't see myself spending a real amount of time with you consistently because of this kind of deficit here. What would we talk about? Well, then that person needs praise. The male is praiseworthy.
Yeah, immediately you go, oh my God, I've misjudged you entirely. I've been, this has been a ruse. I'm sorry. That's what you would do in real life.
Right.
But she storms off, and then she meets with Julie McCoy. And Julie McCoy goes, I'll tell you what you do. Be smart now.
Right.
It's like, what? This is so nutty. And she's like, you're a genius. You are so good for you,
he's
Julie.
He's going to go to the rail and pout. He's going to the railing. All right. Last but not least, let's clean up a couple of calls here. Hey, Brian, Atlanta, Georgia. You want to know how to sort of cancel the cancel culture if everyone just sort of stood up?
Yeah, you had an amazing conversation with Megyn Kelly about it on your recent episode with her, and you said that, or one of you said that. You said, if we all stand at the same time, they can't cancel all of us, but if we stand one at a time, it's not going to work. And then I was hoping that one of you were going to say, so this is what that would look like. This is how, well, first of all, is that even possible?
Well, no. Here is the metaphor, or here's the example. Everyone was scared shitless of Scientology, and no one would stand up to Scientology because Scientology would ruin your life, or so we thought. Mm-hmm. Little by little, people started speaking up against Scientology, and now where's Scientology and who's scared to speak up?
Right.
So it's not going to do it all at once like a book drop, but people are going to slowly start coming out of the woodwork. Look at Scientology as this. when I was speaking out against Scientology, they would cancel you. That was what people firmly believed.
They could do it, too.
And they could.
Yeah.
All right. Take on President Trump's taxes.
You've also been saying the same thing about businesses. Open up.
It's right. Same just thing open, as it, open at the same time. All right. I don't want to get into Trump's taxes. It's whatever. People shouldn't graft on any morality to taxes. Everyone pays the least amount they humanly can.
Well, if they don't like taxes, they should change the tax laws. They should lobby for that.
Well, they did a thing where I think they actually they lowered the taxes in Vermont or something, and whoever was outraged, and they put a thing on the box that said, "Look, if you want to pay more, then pay more. You right. can do that. Hey, Bernie Sanders, if this is outrageous to you, then check the box and pay." None of them checked the box.
Of course,
I don't hold. I hold it against him a little bit for being such a loudmouth about
taxes,
yeah. But. I'm not blaming anyone. Now, whether that makes you a billionaire or not, that's another subject. All right. October 24th, Lafayette, Cajun Dome. I'll do a podcast there with Drew, and then we'll do a stand-up show as well. And go to AdamCarolla.com for all the info and get all the movies, too. What do you got, Drew?
DrDrew.com, Facebook, Dr. Drew, YouTube, Dr. Drew. Check it out there.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew. Say, mahalo.